This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello everybody, and welcome to episode number 295 of the Stacey West podcast. I'm your host this week, Ben, and I'm joined by Chris. How you doing, mate? You well?
Hello. Yes, very well indeed. Very nervous about the upcoming fixture, which of course we're going to spend a fair amount of time discussing. It's all starting to feel a bit real now, even though, you know, we've said this so many times on the podcast, haven't we? A few weeks or months ago now, this was just a pipe dream. It wasn't even really a serious consideration, but the fact we're so close now, it just feels, I'm a bit of a nervous wreck, to be honest. I've been working in Nottingham this last couple of days, and of course end up talking football to the people that you're working with, don't you? And it's weird because obviously these are people that are outside of it. Normally, if you're talking about it in Lincoln or at normal work, there's two or three of you at least that are invested.
Yeah.
So it was interesting kind of just chatting about the story. Obviously, most people aren't paying attention, weren't massively aware of our run, for example, or everyone's saying, oh, I thought you was like mid-table, you had nothing to play for. Like, nope. Really, really, really important things are happening. Very, very scary, nervous things are happening on Saturday. But yeah, it's something to look forward to. But yes. Other than nervous, I am very well, thank you.
Good.
How are you, good sir?
I'm good. Yeah, it's you know, it's a as you say, just nervy ahead of the game. But I did want to share a quick story about kind of tangentially related to the adverts that we have at the minute. Obviously, if you are aware, we're doing ads for McDelivery. So, you know, occasionally when you're at home, I mean, I'm working from home. I think I don't fancy like a sandwich for lunch. I don't fancy, you know, just like a bit of butter and some ham. I'm like, oh, I fancy something different. So yesterday I thought, oh, great stuff. Payday. I'll treat myself. You know, let's have a nice little lunchtime treat. So I thought, go on, Just Eat. And I ordered myself and Rachel a Subway. Thought, great, you know, we'll have a Subway delivery. I went with a salad. I'm not a monster. So we got, you know, ordered it, tracking it on the app so you can see where the driver is and everything. I was thinking, oh, this is great. You know, he's coming up Cannock Hill, so he'll be with us in a couple of minutes. And then it suddenly went from the driver is on Cannock Hill to your food has been delivered. I'm looking out my window. I'm going, no.
Is that one of those old school kind of paper delivery boys who just throws the paper
in the general vicinity of the window? Yeah, but yeah, I just sat there and we're like, "Your food has been delivered." Like, no, it really what? And then I kind of just kept like, you know, looking out the window because occasionally we've had it before where it says it's been delivered, but then the guy comes up like within the next 30 seconds or so, says, so "Okay, right, he's probably on his way." No, it just didn't show up. Just didn't appear at all. So somebody got a free Subway yesterday.
Oh, good. Did you get another one eventually, or did you just cut your losses at that point?
Yeah. Well, we started the process of you know, trying to get the money back on it. But I was half expecting them to go like, "Can you send a photo of the item?" It's like, yeah, all right. And then it'd just be that Will Smith thing of him just going like, with nothing there. I was like, it's just, it was absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we were, I was a bit grumpy, but Rach was very grumpy. Bless her. She wanted a lunch.
Of course. Speaking of food, by the way, that's we'll talk about football soon. By the way, everybody. So I've been working in Nottingham this last couple of days. So we've been this kind of new contract that we've got in Nottingham. These new team of people. It's their kind of new training for a couple of weeks, and it's at the Ice Arena, and the kind of the suite at the top is where we've hired it. And bearing in mind that I'm delivering healthy lifestyle and kind of healthy eating advice. That's what I do. You know, delivering this to a team of coaches who are going to be delivering the same thing. They have some fantastic biscuits on offer in the upstairs. This brand here, who I have never heard of before. For those of you that are on the YouTube video, I brought some home to enjoy. It's called Bronte Salted Caramel and Chocolate. Oh, they were superb. Had some this morning. I think everyone did. And then I was like, they were good. I kind of want some more. So I went back at lunchtime and I was like, you have another one? I was like, well, I was going to, but I'm now very self-conscious about it. And I did. And then before I left, I just put them in my bag as well because I wanted some more.
Oh,
they were really good. So if anyone, I don't know where the hell they come from, but if anyone's ever heard of them or would like to send a pack through to my house, or if Bronte are listening, you'd like to sponsor the podcast,
please do. We're open
for
sponsorship.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. Yeah, they're really good.
No, I mean, that sounds awesome. And also, no, let's not forget, you know, you're in Nottingham and you sampled the delights of the town as well. Or city.
I did, rather. Yeah. Went for a meal out last night to a place called Pizza Punks. That was very cool. That was a really cool place. Just kind of stumbled across it. That was very good. And yeah, went and watched the football in a place called Box. It was, you know, I haven't spent that much time in Nottingham. I was very impressed. Not as impressed as Lincoln, of course. yeah, but it was good. It was good.
No, well, I'll tell you one thing that is very good, and that is the fact that, you know, Lincoln City, we're making some waves, Chris. I don't know where or, you know, how in general it's getting out there, but people are taking notice of us to the point where there has been another substantial investment, and the word substantial definitely applies in this instance. Lincoln City have had a huge investment from Ron and Andrew Fowler, who would not necessarily be a household name to anybody here in the UK, but he's a big name in MLB, the Major League Baseball, over in the States. Obviously, he knows Harvey. He's been involved with the San Diego Padres. And, the a glimpse at the accounts and reading between the lines on some of the stuff that's been said publicly as well. It's been confirmed it's a 7-figure investment into the club, and a bit of number crunching's put that at around £2 million, which is, I mean, that's a phenomenal investment. And it goes to show that there was a quote, actually, which I'm going to highlight, where Clive was talking about when he, Liam and Jez met with Ron, and he says, Liam, Jez and myself first visited Ron 2 summers ago to discuss our vision for the club. So, I mean, we'll come back to that, but first off, just your take on what is another milestone, I guess, in the club at the minute.
Yeah. We seem to be hitting a few of those, don't we, in the last few years, but it's just great news. Yeah. It's great news. Saw a really interesting comment on the YouTube video, because Harvey's done a great interview talking about Ron on the club's YouTube channel. It was great. And I don't know who it is who put the comment on it, but I agreed 100%. And they said, you know, it wasn't long ago where you kind of see the headline American investment and it kind of sends shivers down your spine and there's a few question marks. And I think it's really important to remember that America's a very big place. Mm. There's lots of different people in America, and some of them maybe aren't great, but some of them are really good guys. And we know with Harvey how aligned his vision and his commitment to the club is with the rest of the board. And you only had to hear him speak about Ron in glowing terms. You know, he says, kind of saw him as a bit of a father figure, is kind of what he said. So, you know, none of us at Lincoln City, as Lincoln City supporters, have any sort of reason to doubt the judgment of the club's hierarchy at the moment. You know, that the progress we're making both on and off the pitch is nothing but kind of just amazing, really. You know, it's thinking, sometimes you've got to pinch yourself, haven't you, kind of in terms of where we are now compared to where we were 5 or 6 years ago. I know you've got to live in the moment, but it's not always nice to reflect on that journey sometimes. And the fact that we're attractive enough as a club, as a proposition, and the narrative around the club, I think, is as attractive as maybe the structure. It's just great news. And yeah, for it to be that substantial fee, you know, we know the club loses X amount of money each year around that 3 million mark. This puts a huge, huge, huge kind of number towards covering that.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely fantastic news for the football club. And one thing really jumped out to me in his statement, because obviously we haven't had an interview with Ron or anything like that. He's put two sentences out. I'll read these two sentences because it's part of this that really, really sticks out to me. So he says, I have a lot of respect for Harvey, and it was clear when I met Clive and Liam that these are people I could work with. So again, that kind of alignment is there. I've experienced success in the sporting world before, both in baseball and football. And I look forward to contributing to Lincoln City's continued growth quietly in the background. And it's those last four words that I thought really, really stood out to me, you know, quietly in the background. He's more than happy to be there to provide the expertise, obviously to provide the financial input, but he's not there for the limelight. And I think that just says a lot about the guy's character. And that just kind of set me at ease straight away. And it's interesting, you know, Harvey could speak about Ron for 20 minutes, but Ron doesn't want to be in the limelight himself. And I kind of respect that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's almost a continuation of what happened when, you know, Harvey put his money in. As you've mentioned, that the interview, if you've got a spare 20 minutes, go check out that interview from Harvey on the site. I think Luke actually said, Luke from the club said that, you know, Harvey could have talked for hours if he'd have let him. He's like, we do need to get this out on YouTube, so just rein it in a little bit. But yeah, it's very clear that he's got a huge amount of respect for Ron. And I think at one point he actually said, every decision I've taken at Lincoln City has been prefaced by what would Ron do in this situation. And obviously that's put him in good stead. It's put us in good stead. And, I think, obviously we'll talk about on the pitch stuff shortly, but off the pitch stuff has genuinely been... sorry, I just had a WhatsApp call come through on my computer. Then, the off the pitch stuff is in the healthiest spot that it really could be at the moment. I mean, obviously, there's chaos going on everywhere with the Premier League and the new deal and all of that side of things, and with the independent regulator coming in. But as Charlie spoke to Kieran Maguire again earlier in the week, you know, he's kind of reiterated Lincoln are doing things the right way. And this is another feather in the cap for the club, I think, when it comes to stuff like that. And the thing that I really like about this investment is that it is another instance of not relying on one individual, not relying on a single source of income. You know, we've obviously got the likes of Jay Wright, who's come on board, and he's an investor in the club. We have Harvey, we have Clive, and we have Ron and Andrew now. It's like, yes, these are people that are investing substantial sums, but if one of them were to walk away, it wouldn't kill the club. It would obviously be bad, but it's not like if Dale Vince suddenly gets bored at Forest Green, you know, he walks away and they go pop. It's not the same as the Radfords at Mansfield. It's that collaborative effort to make sure that the board and the club is in the healthiest position that it possibly is. And it's just really exciting. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to go out and spend, you know, 500 grand of this on a striker in the close season. But it puts us in that position where we're able to slowly build up a chest and, you know, build up a war chest and go, okay, well, if we need to do something, then there is the potential that we could do that. And it's just, yeah, really exciting times.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of situation that happened when we signed Ethan Arahan, wasn't it? It wasn't a case of saying, you know, here's some money, go and spend it willy-nilly on what you want. But we identified a player that was going to be significantly improved the first 11 now and also had that real high sell-on value.
Mm-hmm.
It was worth the £200,000-ish we paid for him. Right, here's some, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. That sounds a good investment. Here's the funds to crack on and do it. And yeah, I think that maybe we'll see one of those or two of those come in at some point over the next season or two. But I agree. I don't think this football club's ever going to go out and spend loads and loads of money on the pitch, because this football club is about so much more than just what happens on the pitch. A successful team does drive a lot of that off-field kind of success and growth, but it isn't just about on-field success. You know, the whole infrastructure of the club's allowed us to get to this point, so we have to continue to invest in the infrastructure. And also, as I mentioned, there is still a 3 million gap to plug before we can start to do anything the other side. But this is going to hugely help with that. Just a quick kind of comparison, really. And in kind of like opposite terms, I kind of want to almost like compare us to Wrexham in a way. Both have had kind of meteoric rises in recent seasons from the National League, had been down there for a little while, maybe a club that had been on their knees, fan bases that had maybe been a lost a bit of connection with the club, lost a little bit of positivity. You know, we all know our story. And we've got some American investors in Harvey and now in Ron and Andrew, who are not taking the limelight, who are putting money in shares, which is really important, so the club has no debt at all.
Yep.
You compare that to Wrexham, and I have to say, the show's great. The show is put together brilliantly. But I think it's slightly tainted a little bit by the financials of how the club is actually funded, because every penny that the two owners at Wrexham have put in is a loan with interest. So if they were to leave, the club is fucked. To be honest, I can't think of a better word.
I'm starting to go, how is he going to put this without swearing? But no, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, impossible. So, like, in terms of is Wrexham a better place to be now? Of course, there's no denying the improvement it's made to the local, kind of the actual city itself. But from a purely football perspective, the difference in the two kind of models, if you like, is it couldn't be further apart. And like you said, if anything was to happen to Clive, was to happen to Harvey, then yeah, it's a hole that needs filling. But it's not the entire existence of the football club that's going to be put into question. Whereas if that was to happen at Wrexham, or in fairness, countless other football clubs in the country, then it would be. I think Wrexham's the obvious comparison because they're the ones in the limelight at the moment, and obviously their owners are the poster boys, aren't they? It's the owners. It's not really about the players or the manager. It's the owners. Whereas this couldn't be further from the truth for Lincoln. And I tell you what, I would much prefer to be in our boat, in our shoes, than Wrexham's, even if they had an unlimited pot of money and their ceiling is higher than ours. Don't care. I'd much prefer to be where we are.
Yep, 100%. And it's like you say, it's the point you make about the investments being actual investments and not just loans. It's a, you know, if they want to take anything out of the club, then, you know, they will have to sell what they have. It's not a, oh, well, I just want money back now. It's a real, it's a feather in the cap to the club about, you know, and how they've gone about it. And it was something that when this news was announced, I kind of suddenly realised, oh, yeah, that it had gone a bit quiet for a little while in terms of other news from the club. You know, there wasn't any indication that this was coming. So it was kind of probably a bit of the calm before the storm, I guess. Judging from the dates on some of the photos as well, I believe that Ron and Andrew are over at the moment. I know I looked on Gaz's piece and it said that the date was April 22nd for when they were at the LNER. So they may well be there on Saturday. But
I mean, if you're investing into a football club,
what a better time?
You get yourself turning up for the biggest game of the season, don't you?
Absolutely.
Or the biggest game in many seasons, really. Just on that, a little side note, and I'm sure we'll touch on this later. This is a bigger than any game was in the season that we ended up getting to the playoff final, in my opinion.
Yes.
And the achievement is, if we do end up getting the playoffs, is greater this time round because of with fans in the stadium, obviously, no wage cap. It's super impressive. So if you're an investor, get yourself there because the atmosphere is going to be fantastic. Yeah. What a better, there's no better time to be a Lincoln City supporter, is there? So,
no. But I mean, we'll wrap up the investment story at the moment. I mean, I think the thing that always strikes me, and it goes back to, honestly, I think it goes back to a quote from Alan Long, actually, on the 2016-17 Impossible is Just an Opinion DVD that the club put out. And it's always stuck with me because in there, Alan says, you know, one of the first things that you want to know about somebody is not necessarily are they good managers, but are they good people? And that, are they good people? That phrase has been repeated multiple times throughout the course of, you know, the past few years when following Lincoln City. And it's been, you know, is Harvey a good person? You know, is Jay a good person? And all of those conversations usually end with a resounding yes. And I've said this before on the podcast, and I think we've said this privately as well. Either the people that they're bringing in to further these investments, and I'm going to single out Harvey because he's somebody that we've actually spent time with and we've spoken to quite a lot. Either he is a genuinely nice guy who loves the English game and wants to become a part of it in a way that he feels that he's able to and help progress a football club that otherwise would probably be fine if he didn't, but you know, in order to help us get to another level. Either that's him, or he is an exceptional actor who has done it 24/7 for the past 3 years and, you know, is without a doubt the best liar that I have ever seen in my entire life. And I think I know which one I'm going to go with on that one, because it's hard to keep anything like that up for that amount of time. And anybody that meets him, anybody that speaks to him is captivated, you know, captivated by him and just can sit there and talk to Harvey for ages. And by the sounds of it, Ron is kind of the same, but like you say, he wants to take that seat in the background and just kind of go, I like this thing. I'm going to help this thing. I don't necessarily want the credit for it, or, you know, I don't want the spotlight, but yeah, sure. Here's some funds and some experience to be able to do it. And it goes, you know, I'm reading into his history a little bit more. It sounds like that's him all over. Like he's got a bit of a reputation in San Diego as being a bit of a philanthropist from an educational point of view, like kind of putting kids through college. And I think I was reading that that Gaz was saying that the baseball park at San Diego Toreros which is the college baseball field, it's called Fowler Park because he essentially funded it. So he's very well respected in that field, and hopefully he can start to craft his legacy a little bit in the UK as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think there's so much credit to Harvey goes for this, because I'll be honest, like I don't follow American sports at all. I take a very passing interest in MLS. But in terms of just like traditionally American sports, I have no interest and no knowledge at all. So when Harvey first came on board, I'll be honest, my initial thought was met with a little bit of skepticism because American owners were getting a bit of a bad press, and rightly so at the time. And Harvey couldn't be further away from those kind of the negative traits that are associated with a lot of those his compatriots. This time round, mainly because of how convincing and how just welcoming, I suppose, just all kind of positive, all positive adjectives that you can possibly throw Harvey's direction because of him. This, from my perspective, was met with no skepticism whatsoever. Like, it didn't even cross my mind, hang on, what's going on here? It was just like, oh, this is great. Let's look into this in more depth. But my initial thought was, well, this has to be good because I trust the club. You know, Harvey, Clive, etc., they've earned that trust. And, yeah, just really exciting. Now, again, I don't think we'll see anything kind of overnight here. We're not going to see, as like you say, spending six-figure sums here, there and everywhere. But what we may well see is continued and further investment in infrastructure, continued and further investment in the playing squad gradually. And if we can keep building at the rate we're building at the moment, keep chipping away, then we're going to be a good club, not just for now, but for years and years and years to come. And that's what it's all about ultimately.
Yeah. And then let's not forget, this is the third round of investment from America. We've obviously had Harvey. We then had the sort of trio last February. Who put in as well, it was Pablo Webster, Evan Mitz and Brian Anderson, again, making significant investments into the club. I can't remember seeing the exact figures sort of through that one, but yeah, it's again, it's kind of the tendrils reaching out to multiple different people, and we're not having to rely on one. But I think the important thing which some people will probably be a little bit wary of, is where does this put us in terms of a US takeover? You know, is the club going to be taken over by an American franchise, or, you know, how is it going to be? And I think the thing that the club have been very keen to stress, and obviously Harvey himself has been keen to stress this, it's not a takeover. It's not a power play. It's not a power grab for anything like that. It is, they want to be involved in English football in a way that they feel is beneficial to them, obviously as investors, but also beneficial to the club, and they want to be involved in it, and they want to be involved in the community. Like I say, I was equally as skeptical as you when Harvey came on board, but having spoken to him and having met the man, and you know, all of the conversations that have been had, I firmly believe that his heart and his head is in the right place when it comes to Lincoln City. And if people that he knows and that he trusts are coming on board to do that as well, then I don't see any reason to doubt that at this point.
Absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right. Just to clarify, 12.6% stake is what Ron and Andrew Fowler have invested in the Imps. So it's nothing. It's not a majority stake or anything along those lines, but it's significant sum for a relatively insignificant stake, actually, in fairness of the football club. So yeah, all good stuff. All good stuff. Exciting times ahead, or continued exciting times ahead.
Indeed. So yeah, we'll move away from good news to more good news for people. If you are a fan of CJW himself, Mr. Chris Ray, he is putting out his ImpTunes yearbook. It is available for pre-orders now. I think at ImpTunes on Twitter, we'll fill you in on all of that and give you the links and everything. I believe it's eBay pre-orders again. I've got mine in because I love what Chris does. And yeah, it's always worth a giggle, or always worth getting, because you will get a giggle out of it at the end of it. So I think the gold and silver pre-orders have stopped now, so it is now just a case of buying the book itself. But it'll be worth it. It's great fun. But I mean, the good news, we are building up the good news at the minute, because we're going to get really nervous in the second half of the show this week. But there is some good news, which started as a little bit of a bubbling rumour earlier on in the week, and then it's been seemingly confirmed by Michael Scubala today in his press conference. And that is that there is going to be a player returning from injury. But it's not Ted Bishop and it's not Rico Hackett.
Yeah, and we have been told that Ethan Hamilton and Conor McGrandles are, quote, out for the season. So who else is there left?
Well, to my mind, it's Lewis Montsmer or it's Tyler Walker. I don't think that the club would be... maybe in a position is the wrong word to use, but I don't think that the coaching team would put in Lewis Montsmer into the squad on the final day just because he's potentially available. Because I think the back line is so solid, and obviously given who we're playing, that kind of area of the pitch, I don't really see the need to potentially mess with it unless he is on the bench and it's kind of a morale boost for everybody involved. My suspicions on this, which do tie into some of the rumours earlier on in the week, is that we may see Tyler Walker make an appearance on Saturday, which, I mean, we've got, if that's the case, we've suddenly got, what, four strikers available?
It'd be five, wouldn't it?
Of course, yeah, five, yeah. We didn't have any in December, Chris.
Yeah, no, we've got too many. And it is too many. It genuinely is too many now. Obviously, if it's either of them, it's great news. It'd be good to get either of them back in and around the squad. You know, we might be surprised. It might be Ethan Hamilton or Conor McGrandles if they had some sort of miraculous recovery. But yeah, it's interesting. I'll be honest, I don't think it changes a lot.
No.
It'd be nice for whoever it is. It'd be great for them personally to be in and around the squad again. That'd be a huge boost to them. And if they get a few minutes here and there and can have an impact, fantastic. I don't think it massively impacts the starting 11 or even really the subs that we might make if we are genuinely chasing something, which I think we probably will be for the majority of the 90 minutes. I can't see us being 5-0 up with 10 minutes to go, for example.
I'm going to text you 80 minutes when we're 5-0 up now.
I mean, well, if that's how it is, you can text away, mate. I think I'll deal with it. I think what's interesting here is, of course, Lewis Montsma is out of contract at the end of this season.
Yes.
Whereas Tyler Walker isn't. He has another year. So if we can get Tyler back on the grass and participating in any sort of first team activities, then that means he can start pre-season kind of ready and raring to go. He's not playing catch-up anymore. He can start at the same time as everybody else. Whereas the situation with Lewis, of course, is very much up in the air. So, yeah, we have no idea. There are some rumours behind the scenes that you say about Tyler. It would seem to add up a little bit, but we have no idea. There's no confirmation at all. All we do know is that it's not Rico and it's not Ted. Ted's 50-50, by the way, still touch and go, as Michael said. So we might even have Ted available. But the last two times, I think Ted's been touch and go. He hasn't quite made it. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see there. But they're the two players that Michael specifically named. Ethan Hamilton, Conor McGrandles, and of course the long-term absentees in Montsma and Walker weren't named. So it'd be one of those four is maybe available. We don't know which one. I'll be honest, as great as it would be to have Tyler and or Lewis available in the squad, I would prefer to have Conor McGrandles or Ethan Hamilton available just purely because of the needs of the squad at the moment. Like you said, centre-back is fine. We're really solid at back. Centre-forward, ridiculously, is fine at the moment. Yeah. We've got four first team quality centre forwards now. You know, even if we had the same, I know obviously we signed Joe Taylor, we had Freddie out on loan, but let's imagine we had this four available from the start of the season, even without Tyler. You know, with the situation there was in at the start of the season, we probably wouldn't think Freddie or Jovan were really first team quality yet. We'd say, oh, we've got two, we still need one more. Whereas now I think they've all four of them are very, all justifiably first team squad players, at least. So we have Tyler coming into that, then we've got five. I know, and obviously Ben's been playing central midfield in the last couple of games. So then gives us four strikers plus Ben, doesn't it? But yeah, I'd rather be a centre mid, but we'll take any good news when it's given to us, certainly, when it's not expected.
100%. And it's it just kind of puts the spotlight on where we've been with injuries this season. It's just been such a crazy ride. And I just wonder if, you know, well, if ifs and buts and all that stuff, but, you know, if Tyler hadn't gone out for the season, how different would things look right now? It's absolutely maddening. You'll drive yourself mad if you think about it, but that's probably why we won't.
Indeed. I think what's interesting about the injury situation, though, is because Gary met, I think it was Kieran Walker, the head physio, I think it was Kieran, a little while ago, to kind of investigate into our injury situation. And I think the club paid for some research to be done and a kind of a study to be done to find out if there are any patterns forming, anything we can do differently. And what actually came out of the findings was we're no worse off than anyone else in regard to number of injuries. It's just sheer bad luck that
they've all fallen in one area.
Whenever we've had like a bit of an injury crisis, if you can call it that, it's been two or three players in the same position on the pitch, which has severely weakened that kind of playing department. And that's just bad. That is just bad luck. So we had an absence of strikers earlier in the season. Now we've got an absence of central midfielders. But we're still in the playoffs as it stands currently with one game to go, which is just an incredible achievement.
Indeed.
And I mean, look, you're going to take that final step, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, I think if you'd have said you're going to have three players injured, who would you want to be injured? You would naturally pick one at the back, one in the middle, and one up top. Like, you wouldn't just go, all of our strikers, yeah, let's kill them all. oh, dear. Sod's law of how this season's gone so far, to be honest. But, well, in terms of injuries, on the pitch has been pretty good for the second half, at least. So, Okay, well, we're going to take a very quick break. So for those of you on YouTube, you'll probably get a little bit of behind the scenes as me and Chris probably pull faces at each other while there's a bit of silence. But for those of you listening, go and hear an advert for some food that will hopefully be delivered for you. And when we come back, we'll have... Should we have a little bit of a competition, Chris?
Let's have a potential ticket giveaway for the sold-out game this coming Saturday versus Portsmouth.
And that, ladies and gents, is a cliffhanger. See you in a sec.
I'm Tyler Walker, and you're listening to the Stacey West Podcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm Ethan Arahon, and you're listening to the Stacey West Podcast.
And there we go. So you've heard some adverts, probably. You've seen Chris forget that we're still recording if you're watching on YouTube. And given that we are now putting the podcasts on YouTube, we thought that this might be a good opportunity. If you know somebody that wants a ticket for the game on Saturday, that hasn't got a ticket for the game on Saturday, and is currently unable to get a ticket for the game on Saturday, we've got two that we can give away. And we want them to go to a podcast listener or a YouTube viewer or somebody that likes the site. So a Stacey West fan, I think is probably fair to say. So if you want a chance to get two tickets, so it is a pair of tickets for the sold-out game against Portsmouth on Saturday, that's easy for me to say, all you need to do is go to the YouTube channel. If you're listening to this, go to the YouTube channel and find this episode of the podcast. So it's episode 295. If you're watching it on YouTube, then bravo, you're here already. In the comments below, type, "Ooh, friend," and we will pick somebody at random that has commented with "Ooh, friend." If you're feeling really fancy, give it a thumbs up emoji as well. And if you do that, we'll pick somebody at random on Friday night. Should we say 9 o'clock cutoff, I think is fair, or 8 o'clock?
Yeah, let's say 8 o'clock cutoff, and that'll give us time to get in touch with that person.
Yes. Make sure that there is a, if you do put a comment, make sure that your username is either recognizable, I suppose. But yeah, we will pick somebody and we'll reply to the relevant comment once it's been done. We'll have two tickets for you available on Saturday. Whether that is drop you an email or come find us in the fan zone and we'll pass them across, whatever we decide to do. They're digital tickets, so we can do whatever. But yeah, thank you. That is from the Lincoln City Foundation, which we each received some for the contributions to the 10K, which I am now over.
My knee's still absolutely ruined.
I had
my other one started hurting now. What's going on? I'm just going to retire from all exercising.
I did that a long time ago. I had a sports massage on last night, Wednesday night, to do it, and that was when they say there's a release when you're doing like remedial massage. I was there, you always think, oh, lol, release, sex, but it's kind of like you don't understand. I really didn't get like how when the pressure's applied in the right way, all of a sudden it just kind of goes, and you like everything just feels so much better. And I could actually walk out of the building last night, which was
the first time for a couple of weeks, is it?
Yeah, pretty much. It's sort of just been a slight amount of hobbling since, 1.5K in and something goes pop. You don't think it's going to be great. But, finally over that. So we will move on to...
Yeah, just a quick one before we do, sorry. Just a big thank you to the foundation, because I was completely unaware that there was even tickets available for doing the 10K for the foundation. I didn't know that was a thing. So it was a very pleasant surprise that they popped in my kind of email inbox. So I thought it was only right to offer them to you guys.
Absolutely. So there we go. Get involved. Oh, friend. Right. Well, obviously, you know, we've kind of delayed it for long enough now. And it's time to talk about Portsmouth, Chris. Charlie has done a preview, by the way. We will push you over to YouTube now. If you're watching on YouTube, go check out the preview. And if you're listening, then get on YouTube and check the preview out. We're not going to stick a clip in here because we're going to have too much to talk about otherwise. But just get on there and check out the preview because, he's with the guys from the PO4 podcast who I've been on with before. They're great lads. So, yeah, get involved. But Portsmouth, Chris, it is enormous. It's monumental. It is all of the other words that are usually used to promote things like Marvel movies. It is.
I wouldn't know.
It is ridiculous quite how much pressure I'm feeling, and I'm going to be sat in the stands for Saturday. It's just 6 months ago, or 4 months ago, if you'd have said we'll be in this position, you'd have been laughed out of the building. But now we're here, the final day is upon us. We have to win to guarantee a spot in the playoffs. If we don't win, it entirely hinges on other results. Questions for you. Can we do it? Are Pompey on the beach? And what are we drinking on Saturday?
I'll answer the third one first, because mine's a really boring answer. I'm not drinking alcohol. I have got a hospital appointment at 8:30 on a Sunday morning that I've waited over a year for. So I've got to be on best behaviour on Saturday. But I don't think we'll need any other sort of substances inside of our bodies to support and encourage me to get up for this one. It's going to be a big old day. For me, it's like real nervous energy, but also like really looking forward to it, really excited about it. And you know, we've obviously both said that we're quite scared. I imagine lots of people are quite nervous and apprehensive about kind of how big the game is. But from what Michael Scibola said in his interview, the players seem like they're just really looking forward to it and really embracing it. You know, successful teams playing big games, and we're a successful team at the moment. And we've played in some big games recently, and we've picked up good results and big results when we've needed to. Obviously, Oxford being a big one, coming from a goal behind against Cheltenham in just the last two games. And particularly that response to the disappointing result against Wigan. It wasn't a disappointing performance, I don't think, but a disappointing result. Where we all thought, from a fan's perspective, we thought we were dead and buried. And once again, this team don't know when they're beaten, don't know when they're out of it. Can we win? Yeah, absolutely. Of course we can. Over the last 20 games, Lincoln and Portsmouth are the top two teams in the league, the two in-form sides over the last 20 games. We are top of the league in the last 20 games with a total of 42 points, with 12 wins, 6 draws, just 2 defeats. Also, I think what's really interesting is we've only conceded 11 goals in those 20 games. And we've got a plus 25 goal difference in those games. And Portsmouth second with 41 points, 12 wins as well, but just one more defeat than us and one fewer draw. Their goal difference is plus 14. We've actually scored one more goal than Portsmouth have in that 20 game run, but they have conceded 10 more than we have. And they are one of the best teams in the division. So we're going to touch on kind of what defines a good team. Why are they good? What are they good at? What threats do they have? Do they have any weaknesses in a moment? But your first question to me was, are they on the beach? And I think the answer on everyone's kind of mind is, well, we hope so. we really hope they're on the beach now and they haven't got maybe that same drive and grit as they have shown in abundance this season.
Well, they appear to still be in the bar against Wigan.
Yeah, maybe by, so.
By all accounts, they've been celebrating all week and they just kind of showed up. It's fully a joke. But yeah, apparently some probably showed up half cut by the sounds of it.
Yeah, you know what? Against Wigan, despite losing 2-1, they still created 2.4 XG to Wigan's 1.5, had more shots on target, more possession, more successful passes. So even if it was admittedly by Portsmouth standards, not a desirable result and not a performance of the standard that they've shown this season, they still outperformed Wigan despite the result. So, yeah, of course, we really hope that Portsmouth maybe haven't got their full focus on this game. You can't measure that, really. It's so difficult to kind of predict it. But if we are reading anything into John Messino's comments after that Wigan game, he was asked briefly about going into this one. I couldn't find a Portsmouth press conference about this game. Mm-hmm. I think simply the absence of a press conference about an upcoming game for me maybe feels that, you know, certainly the wider part of Portsmouth Football Club probably aren't hugely focused on this match. You know, hopefully from our perspective, that trickles down into the football department, you know, the playing department as well. But John did say that they looked a little bit leggy against Wigan, you know, long, hard season. They've actually made the third fewest number of substitutions out of any team this season as well in the league, which I thought was really interesting. So they've relied on a settled 11, because no one has a settled 11 anymore, but a smaller kind of consistent group of players. Haven't made too many changes during the game compared to other sides. So that legginess is probably understandable. We hope that continues. But he also said that they have kind of a commitment to the league, really, and the competition to take this game seriously. They want to finish the season on a high, and they want to make sure that they're you know, doing things properly. But the fact you're kind of saying that, and the fact that there isn't a press conference about this game, makes me just really not believe, but hope just a little bit more that maybe they've got one eye on the beach, one eye on what happens after the game, and it's just a little bit of a almost like a hoop to jump through before they get to go on their holidays. You know what I think a real big factor will be is that I think this is really smart by us, and I know it drew quite a lot of criticism from Portsmouth supporters at the time, but you know, normally if we know there's going to be a big following, we allow the away end to be full. Mm-hmm. And what we've done this time is we have restricted the away capacity to the minimum allowed. There's going to be around 1,000 Pompey fans, which means there's going to be an extra around 1,000 Lincoln City supporters in the stadium compared to Portsmouth. We know that they've got great support, certainly away. They create a lot of noise. It would be maybe a party atmosphere for them, a real celebration at the end of the season. If everyone's going to be in dress up, it's the final day of the season, let's go and have a, you know, a nice day out. Whereas now we've kind of said from the get-go, no, this is a day where we're focusing. Thank you very much. Yes, you can come. You can have a minimal amount. And they had their party on Tuesday. So I'm just wondering whether that, you know, traditional, genuinely excellent Portsmouth support, limited in terms of numbers and maybe with one eye maybe on what happens after the game rather than what's happening on the pitch. You know, it's all ifs, buts, maybes, isn't it? But
yeah,
I just really hope that's the case. We're going to go through some more specifics in terms of how they play in a moment, but let's just kind of pass that over to you, really, in terms of what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to touch on the ticketing situation, because I think there's been quite a few disgruntled Portsmouth fans over the past month or so, where there's been, and I think it's true of a few of the bigger clubs in the division, where the away fans will be annoyed if they don't get more tickets for a game, you know, or whatever. And it's like, there is a certain amount of entitlement there with some of the bigger clubs. I think it was me and Charlie that discussed this a while back when the decision was made, actually. But I think in this instance and in other instances where they're coming to a ground that is going to be smaller, for me, it makes more sense from our perspective and also to a degree from their perspective, because if, for example, you're Bolton, or let's drop down a division, let's say you're MK Dons and you restrict away sales for your stadium, and you restrict the away sales to 2,000, for example. You know, thinking back to that, the League Two season where we won the title, and we took 5,000 away to MK Dons. Could you imagine them turning around and going, no, you can only have 2,000 there? It's like they're doing it arbitrarily just so that they can have a smaller section of away fans. This on Saturday for Lincoln City is not arbitrary. We knew full well that if we put those tickets on sale for home fans, they would sell out, and they did over a week ago. To me, that's vindication. That's justification for doing that. Whereas the likes of, you know, MK or Bolton or whichever teams in the division have a bigger stadium that are just doing it to limit the amount of away fans that are there without consideration of, oh, will the rest of the ground sell out? Because a lot of the time it doesn't. And it is just a punitive measure, I suppose. But the fact that we've been able to sell out the allocation well over a week before the game, to me, that vindicates everything.
Oh, absolutely. I think even if that wasn't the case, it's vindicated in this very specific circumstance, because it was always going to be a huge game for us. Or best case scenario, we hoped it was going to be a huge game for us. I think at the time that it was announced, Portsmouth obviously hadn't shown the league up at that point. I think everyone other than Portsmouth fans knew they were going to win the league, but there's always that internal doubt, isn't there? Well, what if we fail and come up short again? So maybe from their perspective, they were thinking, well, maybe we need to go to Lincoln and get a result in the last game of the season to guarantee promotion or guarantee the league title. Obviously, it's transpired that they've walked it in the end. I think if this was a mid-season game, obviously it wouldn't sell out quite as quickly from home perspective.
Yeah, obviously.
We allow the full away following because good atmosphere for a league game, exciting football. And obviously, it's the financial aspect. If you can guarantee seats compared to the big question mark over seats, then you take the money, don't you? But in this very specific instance, the club have gone, no, we need to give the team the best possible opportunity of getting a result on the pitch. So, you know, even if we couldn't sell out that extra, I still think it's actually the correct decision in this circumstance. Yet, of course, like you say, it's sold out a week in advance anyway. So, but I do think that'll be a factor. I do think that the supporters aspect will be a big factor here, with half the amount of Pompey fans that we've ever experienced at Central Bank in recent years, because they've sold out the away end pretty much every time we played them. There's going to be half the amount as what there has been every other time. And we're going to have a completely full Central Bank that's all really geared up to support and back a team that deserves backing. And there does seem to be a real connection at the moment between players, staff, fans. And that can get you places. We saw that, of course, in that magical season in 16-17 and then the subsequent couple of seasons under the Cowleys. And I think, you know, it really can be a factor that can get you over the line. We can be almost like that 12th player at times, particularly when Pompey are, you know, potentially not 100% focused on the game. That can be a real deciding factor against a legitimately excellent team. So, yeah, that's the off-pitch stuff, I suppose. But all these things are immeasurable. There are some things, of course, that we can measure, which can give us at least an indication into what makes Portsmouth the best team in the league in terms of league. Obviously, in terms of league, the league table doesn't lie, apparently, even though last season Ipswich were definitely the best team in League One and came second.
unless you're the BBC or Sky News earlier in the week, did you see that? For some... So somehow during the games in midweek, Reading and Wigan appeared at the top of the table, despite the fact that, according to the table at the time, they had not played any games and they were on -6 and -8, respectively.
Oh.
Yeah, bizarre glitch.
Interesting way of doing it.
Yeah, really, really odd glitch.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's assume that isn't the case and we are still in the playoff race at the moment then. Cool. So, who are Portsmouth Football Club in terms of on the pitch then? Firstly, what makes them good? They have some really, really good individuals, but I want to just touch on their overall, really. So firstly, in terms of formations, they play a pretty standard 4-2-3-1 with not that many rotations. It's not a particularly complicated tactical system. It's just a really structured one. What really stands out to me with Portsmouth, and I'm going to kind of quote Ali Maxwell off the Not the Top 20 pod here, which is a fantastic podcast. I'm sure loads of you guys listen to it. And he said this earlier in the season as a genuine kind of compliment to Portsmouth. I don't think it was taken as a compliment by Portsmouth supporters, but I think it was meant as one. And I completely agree with him, by the way. He says that Portsmouth's floor is the highest floor in the league. So you know, you kind of say, you know, the ceiling and the floor kind of reference, like, on your worst day, what's your performance level? And then your ceiling is, of course, on your best day. They're kind of, even on a bad day, and they're not, things aren't quite clicking, things aren't, they're not quite playing to 100%. And everyone has those days, don't they? They're still a really hard team to beat. They're still one of the best teams in the league, even when they're not on their A game. Even if their ceiling maybe isn't quite as high as, or quite so as exciting or as dramatic maybe as other attacking teams in the league. For example, Bolton and Peterborough particularly are coming to mind in that regard. But what they are is just super consistent, super solid. And even when they're not at their best, they're still pretty consistent and pretty solid. So I've got a few stats to read out. It's not just individual stats here. It's not really here to compare to where we are. It's just give an indication of where they are, because there's not actually a single statistic, like performance metric, that Portsmouth are top for. They're top of the league, but they're not first in any metric. They're not far off. But goals scored, sixth. XG, third. Conceded goals, third fewest. XG against, sixth best. Third for possession, sixth for shots, fifth for crosses, third for touches in the box, ninth for shots against, ball losses, third, passes, third, PPD against is third, deep completions, fifth, progressive runs, fifth, smart passes, 11th, passes into final, third, fifth, key passes, sixth. So what you'll find when you compare most other teams in the league is they will be brilliant at one or two or three of those things, but they'll have some weaknesses here and there. Now that they won't be anywhere near the top, but the pros kind of outweigh the cons. What Portsmouth are good at is they're not necessarily exceptional or league leading in any metric, but they are top five, top six for pretty much everything, both attacking and defending, which just makes them an incredibly balanced and well-rounded team. But there was one statistic that really jumped out to me, which I'm trying to treat this as if we're playing the best version of Portsmouth, by the way. You know, we all hope that we're not, but I'm treating it as if we are. And there was one statistic that really jumped out on me, which was defensive dual success. So this is any players that are trying to win the ball back, basically, header, tackle, interception, etc. They're 23rd for that.
Okay.
What that would mean is, and that's for success. That's not in terms of total, because you think, well, they're a better team, so they have to do fewer duels. This was their success rate. It's 23rd in the league. You know, their defenders have a lot of the ball. They have a really good structure ahead of the ball to limit shots, limit chances, keep teams at bay. But actually, when the ball is in those dangerous areas, the statistics at least suggest that their success rate in those just kind of 1v1s is actually not the best. Ours is fourth best, by the way, for defensive dual success. So that's a real big swing there. Like, that's only one metric. And I always say on here, as you guys all know, one metric on its own doesn't tell a story. It's only when it's backed up by a few. And there's not many others that back it up, I'll be honest. but it was one that jumped out at me. And also that they have the third highest PPDA against. What that means is basically lots of teams respect them and sit off them. They don't get pressed that high very often. So it's hovering around 12, which is pretty high, to be honest. No, they're the highest pressing team in the league over the season. So their PPDA, in terms of their pressing, their out-of-possession stuff is really aggressive. It's number one in the league. We're up there over the last 6 months, over the last kind of 4 months, sorry. But over the whole full season, of course, we knew that we were really passive, so that kind of skews the numbers a little bit. But it interested me to thinking, if their defensive duels success is not the best on those kind of real one-to-ones, and they're not that used to being pressed really aggressively, and we know our blueprint is pressing incredibly aggressively and being really successful in those kind of one-on-ones, like Ben House, for example, the amount of times he's won the ball back or forced an error from a centre-back or a holding midfielder, that I actually think we don't need to adapt our DNA here to get something out of Portsmouth. I think the best version of Lincoln City in the system and the style that we have become accustomed to asks a lot of Portsmouth at the moment. And that was a nice thing to discover. So what do we need to do to beat them? It's nothing different than what we have been doing. It's kind of, it's putting the performance in as well as it can be, you know, getting it right, being on our game. But if everyone's on board and everyone is, yeah, on the same page with this, I think even if this was a game that where both teams had something riding on it, we're actually, we'd be well suited to get something out of this game. So with all the other factors of Portsmouth, maybe you're going to be just 1 or 2% off it, hopefully, even if it's not a conscious thing from their perspective. Yeah, it gives me a bit of confidence. You know, I'm still nervous, I'm still terrified because how much it means and how much is riding on the game. But if I was not a Lincoln or Pompey fan and just looking at this objectively, honestly, I'd back Lincoln. I really would. It'd be a tight game, but you know, if we can start the game really quickly, which we have done historically, apart from against Cheltenham, in fairness, we started the game really well. If we can start the game like we started the second half against Cheltenham, which was absolutely brilliant, by the way, they literally couldn't get out their third. And if Pompey aren't 100% up for that battle, no one's going to want to get injured and miss a season in the Championship or miss a season going into the Championship. Even if it's not conscious, it might just be lingering in the back of their minds. So if they know they're in for a tough afternoon in the first 10, 15 minutes, I honestly think we can get on the right side of the result. I really, really do. I'm really cautious about being confident. I'm positive that we can. Of course, players are humans. They're going to be potentially nervous. You know, there might be a few rash decisions here and there. There are so many variables in a game of football that you can't predict or prepare for. But in terms of, do we need to adapt our style to beat Portsmouth? No. Excuse me. No, we actually don't. We just need to be the best version of ourselves. And then we would, I think, give the best version of Portsmouth a really good game. So if this is a not the best version of Portsmouth, even though their kind of floor is a really high floor, you know, their work performance is still good, I think we've got the tools in our squad to be able to unpick them and be able to get the result that we need. And it's going to be a nervy afternoon, but it's going to be a really exciting afternoon. It's just not, isn't it great to have a game? Well, we've had so many recently, but just to have a game, last game of the season, for it to have something really riding on it. Because the last last games have been fun, nice and relaxed, kind of chilled out atmosphere. But this is what football is all about, isn't it?
It is. But at the same time, like, I love it, but I don't like it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
There's a Ramesh Ranganathan joke about one of his kids. He goes like, "Man, my kids, like, I love them, but I don't like them." And that's exactly what Saturday is. It's like, I'm going to love the day until 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then 5 o'clock's going to hit and I'm either going to be, you know, ecstatic or inconsolable or doubtless somewhere in between because, you know, that they are the two extreme ends of the spectrum. But like, I love football and I love Lincoln City, but days like Saturday are not games that they're not days that do me any favors.
Indeed.
So yeah, it's heartening to hear you say all that about, you know, not necessarily needing to change the style. The thing for me is obviously we've been in the same division as Portsmouth now for a few seasons. We've won once.
Yeah, true.
We've drawn twice and they've won six times. So there is a little bit of, you know, potentially coming down to earth with a bit of a bump. But at the same time, those previous games have had nowhere near the amount riding on it as it does on Saturday. And I think you were right to mention the Cheltenham game, and obviously we didn't start particularly great there. I thought the nerves started to show a little bit for that first 10 minutes, but at the same time, Cheltenham were fighting for their lives. They threw the kitchen sink at us. We went and did the same thing for them. It's just going to be an interesting game on Saturday. I think we're going to see some chaos unfold on Saturday.
And even if that's not at Sinsel Bank, you know,
yes,
it's kind of as I'm sure everyone here is very aware of, that there are four teams vying for two playoff spots. So I think have you got anything else to add on Portsmouth before we just really quickly just have a quick chat about the permutations really of the other clubs that we're going to be vying with for the one of those last two spots.
Yeah, no, I think you've covered all of the on pitch stuff. I think we've spoken about a lot of the off pitch stuff as well. Looking ahead to the weekend and beyond, but yeah, let's talk about these spots because obviously we have Barnsley one above us, 1 point above us. We have Oxford on the same amount of points as us with a much five goal difference worse. That's terrible English. Five fewer goals in their goal difference. And then Blackpool, 1 point below us in Oxford with a massive nine fewer in their goal difference.
Yes. The first one to touch on is Barnsley, because you know a few weeks ago, I'm sure most people did thought Barnsley were at very least guaranteed a playoff spot. We were playing for that final spot, and suddenly, with the frankly terrible form that Barnsley have been showing recently, they're in free fall at the moment. But there is a factor, of course, in that they pop incredibly.
Yeah,
with the manager this week after their most recent defeat,
unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Yeah. So just quickly on Barnsley. So over the last 20 games, where we know that we're the form team over the last 20 games, Barnsley are 12th.
Mm-hmm.
The last 10 games, Barnsley are 20th. And they're over the whole season, Barnsley's home form is 12th. So even though they're a pretty good team on paper in terms of the league position over the course of the season, the standalone game with the big factor that the gaffer has gone. So that's going to have this adds to some additional chaos to it. Now, they are at home to a Northampton side who have definitely been on the beach for weeks, to be honest. They've been had some inconsistent results, but it's a team that's obviously going to be playing with a bit of freedom on that last game. So it's so hard to predict that anything could happen. Out of these four fixtures, on paper, you'd expect all four, the other three teams to win their fixtures, but I don't think it's quite as simple as that. And if we had to predict just one of those teams to drop points, for me, it's actually Barnsley that are the most likely.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's just that, like, the X factor there of they've gotten rid of their manager midweek before the final game of the season. And to my knowledge, they've not had a name come in permanently yet. I think they've had the assistant take charge on Saturday. So that, to me, is where the madness comes from. Like, surely if you're going to be binning off your manager this close to the end of the season, you have a plan or an idea as to who's coming in. I don't know. Insane. Absolutely insanity. Oxford then.
Exeter City away. Mm. Exeter, the third, the team with the best form, third best form, sorry, in the last 10 games. Mm-hmm. So again, we're top of the league for the last 10 game run. But yeah, Exeter, interestingly, are third. It's almost like they're playing with a real bit of confidence now leading into next season. They are, of course, at home. And over the course of the season, though, their home form is only the 18th best, with Oxford's away form being seventh best. So again, you can read so much into these games, can't you? Because you know it's coming down to one standalone fixture. So all form does often go out the window, but it's the only kind of evidence you have to try and make some sort of prediction. So I do feel Exeter are going to be a tough team to play against here. Oxford's, we know, are pretty inconsistent. Let's be honest, it was great for us to beat them. The game should have been a draw. It should have been 0-0, really, in terms of the overall chances, I think, or 1-1 in terms of the chances that both teams made. But we obviously got the result that mattered, and the game that they drew against Stevenage, God only knows how they didn't win that game.
1-1 with no shots on target. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Obviously, we're delighted that that is what happened.
Oh, yeah.
But if we're looking at performance metrics, even though their results have dropped off over the last couple of games, after being on a great run themselves, the performance levels hadn't really dropped. They just got on the wrong side of results. But Exeter are a better footballing team significantly better footballing team than Stevenage, despite Stevenage's league position, and we know they're hard to play against. But in terms of their just individual quality, Exeter are good. They're a really solid League One team playing with absolute freedom. And yeah, they've had that bit of freedom for a good few weeks now because they've been safe from relegation without the real potential of pushing for playoffs. But they've been in that situation similar to Northampton really for weeks now. Whereas Northampton's, who were actually not a million miles away from them, an outside chance of a playoff shout maybe 10 games ago, and they've kind of gone really inconsistent since dropping away. Exeter have really pushed on recently. So this will be a real tough game, particularly away from home on a long journey for Oxford. So it's a really, really interesting one. Again, on paper, you'd expect Oxford to win. But it's certainly, I don't think this is a simple game at all.
Mm. So you say about, you think Barnsley could potentially be the ones to drop points from the challengers. I was more tempted to say that I think Blackpool are going to be the ones to drop points because I've been really impressed when I've seen Reading this season, particularly at home. We obviously know that Blackpool's away form is awful as well. Blackpool away at Reading at the weekend, I would be more tempted to suggest or to predict rather that Blackpool are going to be the ones to drop points. Obviously, I'd really like it if they all did. and I imagine there will be murmurs and swells of if, you know, you'll hear 10,000 phones vibrate all at once on Saturday. And, yeah. Everyone just picks it up and goes, oh, no. But yeah, we'll be glued to our phones. I didn't
realise how poor Blackpool's away form was over the course of the season. They're 14th.
It's not been great.
Away from home. Whereas Reading's home form is over the course of the whole season. And we all know that they are a significantly better football team now than they were in the first half of the season. Eighth. Got their eighth best home record in the league. So, yeah, this is going to be a real tough game. And again, in terms of overall form in the last sort of 10 games, no, Reading are top half, but Blackpool are sixth. So you can look at numbers all day and change your mind on what you expect. But, you know, we know from our experience that Reading are good. They're good at Central Bank and they're better now than they were then. They were a really, really good team at the Medeski, or whatever it's called now, when they played us in our one-all draw. Again, it's going to be a tough game. So it's interesting, isn't it? Because on paper, and Michael Skubala said this, is like you expect all three of our rivals to win their games, but actually none of them are simple.
No,
none of them are simple. Obviously, ours on paper is going to be the most challenging, and rightly so. It's the best team in the league. All four of ours plus the playoff rivals' oppositions are all teams that on paper have nothing to play for. So it's going to be so difficult to predict. I think it's going to be us and Oxford. that's I don't know what that actually is. My gut feeling is that they're on a real bad run, especially if they start the game poorly. Even though there's going to be probably a slightly better atmosphere in the ground now than there would have been under the manager before, because I think he was obviously the blame was pointed at him. So bad start, animosity in the crowd creates a challenging atmosphere. As we said earlier, that atmosphere in the crowd can have a huge influence on the pitch. We just kind of bigged up how influential it could be at Central Bank. So I think they'll have a little bit of leeway there compared to what it would have been under Collins. But if they do start the game poorly, concede a goal, yeah, you would certainly feel the confidence sap out of the crowd, I think, at Barnsley. And if that happens, yeah, you may be questioning whether they'll be able to get out of it. It just depends which version of Northampton Town turned up, really.
Yeah. I mean, I just think there's a slight poetic irony in if we were to make the playoffs ahead of Barnsley after we thumped them, and then it's basically derailed the season. It's unbelievable. But look, we're getting on for an hour and 10, if not a little bit more now, so we will wrap up the podcast. But I do just want to give a very quick look at one of our loan players who is out and making a phenomenal difference. He won't be coming back. It's, of course, Hacks.
of course.
Hakiba Delican went to Doncaster on the 25th or 27th of January. On that date, Doncaster were 22nd in League Two. as of Tuesday night, Doncaster are fifth in League Two, and Hakeeb has scored or assisted in pretty much every game he's been in.
Him and the team have been incredible. Is it 10 wins in a row?
Something like that. Yeah, it's recently. Absolutely phenomenal. And look, I mean, like I say, Hax won't be coming back to the club. His contract's at an end. He will probably be paraded through the town of Doncaster on people's shoulders or on a great big, you know, golden throne or whatever, if they can do it. But we've said it before. We're just delighted for him.
The fact that he's
gone out, he's made it, you know, he's made a success of himself where he's gone to. Just absolutely fantastic. And that story is something else. Like, we thought we've had a good run. We went from, we went from 11th to 5th or 6th rather. Like, Doncaster have gone from 22nd to 5th. I mean, number one, that's a hell of a run. But number two, it also shows how crazy tight that division is.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because absolute credit to Doncaster. Because what you find is the leagues, as you go up higher in the leagues, is that teams become more consistent. You know, there's just as much talent down in League Two as there is in the, is kind of probably at the lower end of the Championship in terms of just on-ball ability. But it's just consistency. And to put 10 games in a row is obviously incredibly consistent, really, really, really impressive. But it does say, what's been a really interesting story to follow in League Two has been basically whichever team has found themselves in like fifth, like sixth and seventh, the last two spots in the playoffs, they tend to have been on a decent run to get themselves there. And as soon as they get there, they go on a bad run. And no one's ever seen to kind of keep hold of that. Doncaster obviously are joining that race at what your class is absolutely the right time, just as we hope we are. And I hope they do it. I genuinely hope they do it, because it would be just a great story.
Yeah, same. Absolutely. So, but yeah, that's enough about League Two. We won't be about there for a while. We won't be about there for a long time. But look, thank you for joining me and Chris, everybody. It's been a pleasure. Don't forget, friend. And you might, if you haven't got a ticket for Saturday, you might be able to get a hold of one. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow the blog on Twitter or whatever. Come say hello if you see us in the fan zone. Well, I'll have a drink. I'll have Chris's drink if you want, because he won't be drinking on Saturday. But until then, I don't know. We're not podcasting Sunday, are we? Because we are out on Sunday.
Yes. It's the
awards night.
Of course, the player awards night. So we've paid quite a lot of money for a table.
should be attending as a podcast team.
Yes, indeed. It'll hopefully be a really good evening to go and attend. But because of that, recording a podcast might be challenging. I think we'll play it by ear.
It's Monday.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, Monday. But there will be a podcast out reviewing Portsmouth, whatever happens. And of course, we'll be in touch with everyone and let you know what's going on after that. But big old game first before any of that happens, isn't there?
Massive, Chris. So we'll see you Saturday. Up the Imps.
Up the Imps.
It's the 90th minute and all your mates around watching the Imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.